Alrighty, welcome back to another episode of the Justify Your Existence podcast. I'm your host, Brendan Farrell. Today, I am joined by Jason DeLoach, aka CFB Numbers on Twitter. Jason, how are you?
I'm doing great, man. How you doing?
I'm doing just fine. For those who don't know, what do you do?
You can mostly find me on Twitter at CFB Numbers. I'll post graphs weekly, or just whatever I end up, finding. But my day job is I work for Pro Football Focus or PFF. And I help out the broadcasters on this season. I've been doing college football, so I've been doing a little Notre Dame, a little NBC Big Ten primetime. Sometimes I help out Sunday Night Football, Thursday Night Football in the NFL. So mainly just kind of get the broadcasters and broadcast crews up to speed on their games. It's a lot of numbers, a lot of matchup stuff, storylines. Yeah, it's been all fun. It's been a This is the grind part of the season, but no, it's been great.
So I have summoned you this week because I've sort of been thinking about this topic, and it is that Ole Miss's offense has, I don't want to say disappeared, but it has certainly not matched the heights that we saw early in the season during non-conference play. And I could use some help breaking down where everything has gone wrong. I mean, first, I think I just want to set a baseline of like, I don't think it can be overstated. Like, the numbers that Ole Miss was putting up early in the season, granted against really soft schedule though, were unbelievable.
Oh yeah, of course. I mean, they were the numbers I have. They were second in EPA per play the first 4 weeks of the season, third in touchdown drive rate, third in EPA per run, fourth in EPA per pass. So top five, offensive efficiency through the first 4 weeks. I know you do have to kind of discount a little bit of their opponent quality, but even then, when you look at, the spreads of those games, they were beating the spreads, they were beating expectations. They're blowing teams out of the water. That's exactly, what you expect from a contending team. Like you want them to be that dominant. And I know we talked about that before, but like just carrying over to SEC play, you'd still expect it to be a little bit better than, what it has been over the past, three games. The numbers I have past three games, 42nd in EPA per play. So now they're, closer to average, 42nd in the run, 39th in the pass. So it's definitely fallen off, a little bit of a cliff there, for these last three games. And, you kind of hate to, play the opponent game and be like, oh, they only beat up on, worse teams. They struggle against better teams. Like you kind of hate to say that about your team, but I don't know that there might be a little bit of that going on with Ole Miss.
Yeah, I mean, I was kind of digging through some non-con versus conference play stuff yesterday, and I mean, to really no one's surprise, like pretty much like every SEC team like sees a decline in offensive efficiency when they start playing conference opponents, and that's not some kind of like SEC superiority thing. It's just the scheduling tendencies of SEC teams is that, maybe they play somebody good and then, like two or three bad opponents. And then, we get into conference play, right? But I mean, the fallout for Ole Miss has been pretty unbelievable. And yeah, so I mean, what have been your like early impressions of where things have gone wrong?
I think for me, the biggest thing that has sort of gone wrong is this offensive line and sort of, the pressure that they've allowed in the first 4 weeks of the season, only a 17% pressure rate allowed. That was the fourth lowest, and the fourth lowest in the Power Four. Last three games, 40% pressure rate allowed. That's 54th in the Power Four. That's only out of 68 teams, so near the bottom. This offensive line has really struggled. And granted, again, we talk about opponents. They played Kentucky, they played South Carolina, two teams that have solid defensive line. So again, you kind of expect pressure rates to increase, but maybe not as much as you would have hoped for if you're Ole Miss. Jackson Dart has been, he's been good under pressure. I mean, for most quarterbacks, their play gets worse under pressure. That's not some, that's just kind of, obvious big brain thing. Quarterbacks are not as good under pressure. But I think the one thing that Dart's really struggled at this year is his play outside of the pocket. If you look at PFF grade, his play outside of the pocket ranks in the fifth percentile of FBS quarterbacks. So he's really struggling to sort of create outside of the pocket. And I think that's one thing with Jackson Dart that, coming into the season, we kind of wanted to see a little bit more of that play creation. We know Lane Kiffin's system, RPOs, very scheme heavy, scheme, driven system, but like what can Jackson Dart do outside of that scheme? And I kind of feel like this season he's hasn't really shown that all that much. And I think that kind of aids in, why they're struggling against better teams and better defensive lines that can actually generate pressure and, where are those answers to that pressure? And I feel like past three games, they've kind of failed some of that test.
So I had a couple questions with what you just mentioned. First off, when it comes to like the percentage of dropbacks where there's pressure, how much of that is just Dart holding onto the ball for too long, right? Because we can talk about pressure rates and stuff about and the quality of the offensive line, but part of the problem, at least in my book, is that he's just a lot of times pressure comes when you just hold onto the ball too long.
Oh yeah, no doubt. Against Kentucky, 3.29 average time to throw. That's pretty freaking high. Against Ole Miss last, or not Ole Miss, against LSU last week, 2.86 time to throw. The average, you kind of want to be around 2.5. Past 2.5 is when you really see pressures get charged to quarterbacks. Like you said, holding on to the football. So I think it's definitely a combination of Dart holding on to the football, but then also the offensive line giving up pressure. When you have both of those kind of working together, that's when you get those, heavy sack numbers. And I want to say I saw your graph on the expected points added loss to sacks. Those can definitely add up. I think the average is around, you lose around 2 expected points per sack. Those can add up, and those can really derail offenses and really tank efficiency.
I don't have the numbers in front of me on it, but I believe also like just in general, like the odds of having a drive that produces points goes way down even with like one sack.
Exactly, yeah.
But and then the other question I had was when you mention like trying to or struggling to create plays out of the pocket, that wouldn't count like trying to pull the ball down and trying to like run forward and then getting sacked, right?
Yeah, I think it's for Dart. I think he has the athleticism to kind of just tuck it and run. So I think, check that box. But I think it's more, especially just his PFF grade, his PFF pass grade outside the pocket, being that low. I think you kind of want to see more with his arm outside of the pocket. It's nice to be able to tuck it and run, but you're not going to be able to do that often, especially at the next level. But if you can, if you can make plays with your arm outside of the pocket, that can just, bring this offense to that whole other level. And if they are struggling, in structure, or if they're struggling to run the ball, plays like that can really keep the offense on schedule.
Gotcha, because I feel like part of the problem on Saturday was just Dart for holding the ball for too long, and then it just seemed like he did not have the athleticism, I guess, to sort of get away from pressure on Saturday. So that was kind of the one thing that stuck out to me.
Yeah, and I mean, you're gonna continue to see, I mean, they play Georgia at some point. I mean, they're gonna have to, contend with that defense. Yeah, I mean, it's one thing to kind of tuck it and run against Furman, but then a whole other thing against, Kentucky or South Carolina with these defensive lines.
And if you don't have it in front of you, because I'm bringing this up kind of cold on you, that's fine. But I was curious, what the numbers are like between when he targets Trey Harris and when he doesn't. I can give you some time on that, but that is also a thought that just occurred to me.
I can look, but I think it's also, something with this offense. Trey Harris's target rate is, let's see, this season his target rate is 39.4%. I mean, it's when he's passing the ball, it's entirely Trey Harris. You'd like to see a little bit more Antoine Wells, you'd like to see a little bit more Caden Lee. I mean, it can't just be Trey Harris, especially if he's banged up. Or if he, does get injured enough to miss a game. But yeah, it kind of has to be a little bit more than him. If you look at just like yards per route run, which is just, yards divided by how many, routes they run, Trey Harris was at 5.25, which is, I don't know, I don't have it in front of me ranks wise, but that's near the top of FBS wide receivers. When you go to Caden Lee, who's the next targeted Ole Miss wide receiver, it drops all the way down to 2.11. And then if you go to Antoine Wells, it's 2.04. So that's a 3 yard difference in route run between Trey Harris and Caden Lee. So you can just kind of see that drop off of productivity when they target someone outside of Trey Harris. Ideally, better offense, you want another weapon. It kind of just feels like they have Trey Harris and that's it.
Yeah, and you could totally get away with that against the Middle Tennessee States and even the Wake Forest of the world, but apparently not against Kentucky and LSU, and you can, I would imagine, almost certainly not against Georgia.
Yeah, no. I mean, it's they're if they're just going to lock down Trey Harris, I mean, that's a massive drop in efficiency and productivity, and you got to have answers outside of that.
Yeah, and sort of one of the other things I've looked at is, well, I guess let me touch on this when it comes to sort of passing and pressures and sacks, is that in the two games that Ole Miss has lost, Jackson Dart has taken 10 sacks. They've had 35 pressures in those two games, or pressures allowed, I should say. And he's had an identical 28.6% pressure to sack percentage. And for context on that, it's what anything above 20% is like a no-go.
Yeah, ideally pressure to sack rate, you want it 20 or below. 25 or higher is when you're like, okay, this is a him problem. So yeah, 28%, that's not good at all.
Yeah, granted, single game, but like,
Yeah, still.
It is sort of a symptom of a larger problem because it's funny, you would think as somebody spends more time in the system that they get more familiar with it and that number would go down over time. Jackson Dart's pressure to sack percentage has gone up every year
Oh
with
my
roughly
God.
the same amount of time to throw.
Oh, that is not good by any stretch of imagination. I mean, you really want it to be decreasing as they go on through their college career. And yeah, no, that's tough. That's him holding the ball, that's him hesitating. And you just can't have it. It's gonna stunt drives, it's gonna tank efficiency. You can't have that.
And I think the other weird stat is that for the most part, like Dart's been like fairly good at avoiding, turnover worthy plays, but he had four against LSU. That is half of his season total. Weird game, weird game.
And speaking of LSU, Garrett Nussmeier, I think the number was 21 pressures on Garrett Nussmeier, zero sacks. The guy did not get sacked. Like
Yeah, no, I
his
mentioned this
pressure.
last week. His sack avoidance is unreal.
Yeah, his pressure to sack rate is 1.8%. Again, I know Jackson Dart was 28% in one game. Fair enough. I don't have his season up right now, but Garrett Nussmeier's is 1.8%. That's higher than elite. That's like God tier sack avoidance. So when you just kind of see that, you could just take that game by itself and kind of just see the difference, with Jackson Dart not being able to avoid those sacks, Garrett Nussmeier, navigating through the pocket. I mean, that's the difference between winning and losing, and it quite literally was, in this game.
I mean, looking at game on paper, and both Nussmeier and Jackson Dart had a 35% success rate, which, I mean, it's decently low. But Garrett Nussmeier, they credited him with 0.15 EPA per play versus Jackson Dart's 0.03. And I wouldn't be surprised if most of the difference there is sacks.
Sacks. Sacks, yeah. Like we said, like I said, I think it's like minus two expected points added per sack. It adds up. It really adds up. Obviously that number fluctuates based off of, when you take the sack, if you take a third down sack, it's gonna be, worse on your EPA. But yeah, no, it's a lot of people obviously focus on like interceptions, like I talk about like touchdown interception ratio and all that stuff, but sacks add up. They definitely add up, and they can definitely chunk away at that offensive efficiency.
It's one of many reasons why we should all hate passer rating.
Yes, 100%.
But I think sort of the other problem is that they can't really run the ball or at least run their way out of it. Like to me, it's weird because Ulysses Bentley has had a very weird status when it comes to. Well, like he's just had a very weird status. But he finally gets in a game this week and he goes off, right? As far as I can tell, he has had the only game in conference play for Ole Miss with a positive EPA per play when it comes to running the ball outside of, I haven't checked for Jackson Dart, but those are quarterback scrambles and I'm not going to count those.
Yeah, I would imagine he's positive because it's a weird thing where it's like scrambles. It's weird. Like sacks count as dropbacks, but then scrambles count as, rushes, so it's or just scrambles. So it's like all scrambles are positive yards, all sacks are negative. So it's very I don't know. You gotta be careful with that.
Yeah, but it's just interesting because again, like Bentley against LSU averaged a 0.44 EPA per play on 11 carries. But in their other two conference games, they just have not gotten anything going on the ground.
Yeah. And I mean, when you're in that RPO heavy system with Lane Kiffin, you have to be able to run the ball. You have to be able to, present that option on every play to, in order to, have that option with the passing tag and, keeping defenses honest. But if they can stop you on runs pretty effectively, then, you're not really going to get much out of that RPO game. It's going to mess up the whole offense. So yeah, they definitely need to run the ball better.
But what I will say is that to me, Jackson Dart is like, I think he's limited as a passer, but I think the things that he's good at, he's really, really good at. Like, I think he's a really good intermediate thrower of the ball, and he's really good off play action. Now, we can debate whether or not you need the ground game to be successful when it comes to play action. But I don't really think those two things have quite gone away.
Yeah, no, I mean, yeah, we can debate all we want about play action and whether you need an effective ground game. But yeah, I think Jackson Dart's very good with this system. Like you said, off play action, reading those RPOs and kind of, navigating that type of offense. But yeah, I mean, like I said before, biggest thing I think is just how can he do it out of structure. How can he create plays when the play breaks down? Yeah, that's just the biggest thing for him.
Yeah, I don't know, just like I don't know, like what all has like kind of popped off the screen to you?
For him, personally, I think, I mean, again, like you said, I think this is a good system for him. I think arm talent wise, he's above average slash good. I wouldn't say he has like a cannon or like plus arm strength if you were trying to, use draft terms or anything like that. But I think he's mobile enough to keep you honest. I think you have to respect that as a defense. Yeah, now, just like I said, out of structure play, can he keep that offense on schedule? And I feel like past three games, it really hasn't materialized.
Yeah, I mean the sort of the interesting thing from the LSU game is It really, I think, did a decent job of limiting sort of the intermediate stuff. He was just he only had six pass attempts that were between 10 and 19 yards. Everything else was either short behind the line or way down the field, and the accuracy on deep throws wasn't there. So yeah, I mean, I guess that's maybe sort of the book on that, but I mean, that doesn't, it's a lot easier to say, oh, just like guard the intermediate stuff, and then it is to like actually guard the intermediate stuff.
Oh yeah, I mean it's yeah, I mean it's you can't just sit guys in the middle there. I mean offenses can scheme around it or use motion to try and get guys out of the middle. But yeah, I think LSU did a good job kind of taking that away from him and kind of just pressuring him and getting him on the ground.
Yeah, and then what did you think, or what do you think? I don't know. Are there any positives right now, you think?
I mean, I still think, you're not like totally tossing out the first three game or four games of the season and just kind of, being doom and gloom and this is over. It's all done. They still have an opportunity to make the playoffs, make noise in the SEC. Who do they play? They play Oklahoma next. Oklahoma struggling offense, so they do have a tough defense. So I think Ole Miss kind of can work on their offense without sort of feeling like they need to win that game in a shootout. But I don't think you just throw away the first four games. I think there was definitely something there. I think they sort of, had that elite offense, and I don't think that's just gone forever. I think they just need to get back to what was working then and just kind of adjusting based off of their, stronger quality of opponents going forward.
Yeah, I think you're right on that end. I think, they took care of, the beginning of their schedule the way that you would expect a top five, top 10 team to do. But I want to throw an interesting comparison at you. I feel, and this might have been me watching these two games at the exact same time. I feel like the Florida LSU, or the Florida Tennessee and Ole Miss LSU games were very similar in terms of, team on the road throws away points early and can't salvage a win out of it. Granted, all of those teams are in very different positions, but I feel like Ole Miss and Tennessee are in a very similar spot where they were, pretty highly touted preseason wise, really put up some points on some cupcakes, and then entered conference play and got punched in the mouth, and we don't know what to think of them.
Yeah, no, that's actually a really good comparison. I haven't done my consensus power ratings yet, but I've noticed throughout the season, Ole Miss and Tennessee are like on top of each other. They've been, very close in power ratings. And then, like you said, it's been, Tennessee was dominant to start the season against cupcakes. Ole Miss, similar story. High powered offenses you want to score 40, 50 points a game. And then, like you said, kind of got punched in the mouth a little bit. I will say though, I mean, two losses for Ole Miss. I mean, they only lost by three to Kentucky, and then obviously lost in overtime to LSU, also by three. I mean, it's only six, 6 point margin between those two games. So it's not like they got like punched in the mouth and lost by 30 to LSU or something like that. It's two close one score games. So again, I don't think it's. I don't think the season's completely like over and done and Ole Miss is fraud alert and the ceiling or the floor is gone or whatever. I still think they're a very good football team, very good offense. And they have a November stretch that, or I guess the rest of the season where they can prove themselves. And I mean, they're still in playoff contention. They can still get that at large bid, make some noise against Georgia. And I feel like the losses are all, nobody will care about that,
Oh yeah, and I wanted to further touch on the Tennessee comparison because I feel like Tennessee is also in an interesting spot when it comes to our quarterback might not be matching the preseason expectations we had for him, and also we might have some offensive line problems. I don't think Dart's problems are as bad as Nico's right now, because it seems like all you need to do with Nico is say boo while he's in the pocket and he doesn't know what to do. But I feel like pressure is still a big thing for both of those two.
Oh yeah, no. I think Jackson Dart handles pressure a little bit better than Nico. Nico's been interesting. I kind of like every time I post a quarterback graph with Nico, he hasn't been like great, and I'm like, crap, someone's gonna be like, oh, these numbers are no good. Nico's been great. But honestly, yeah, when you look at him play, I mean, it hasn't been as effective as maybe you kind of hoped. I think a lot of people going from Joe Milton to Nico, they're like, all right, this is it. You know, next level offensive efficiency. Let's go. National championship contenders. Hasn't really materialized all that much. But yeah, like you said, I mean, he's really struggled under pressure. Just a comparison, Nico under pressure, his PFF grade ranks in the 8th percentile. For Jackson Dart this season, it's 65th. So again, he can handle. Dart can handle pressure. Most of that I feel like it is just kind of him taking off running or kind of just finding that scramble yardage. But yeah, it's definitely not as bad under pressure as Nico. So that's a good thing for Dart. That's a win in his column.
Yeah, and I mean, yes, also to mention or to go off what you said a few minutes ago. Yeah, I mean, I think they're probably a little unlucky to have not won either of the close games that they've played in this year. I was a little surprised when you posted your thing about Pythagorean expectation and Ole Miss. I wasn't surprised to see that Ole Miss was in the towards the bottom, but negative 1.7 wins above expectations is not quite what I had, because I was like, well, those t seems to me like it's two toss-up games, so it'd be about 50-50. So it'd probably be more like closer to one. But I was
Yeah,
also looking. Oh,
for
sorry,
those
I'll
who
let you go.
didn't, no, it's all good. For those who didn't see the graph, basically it's Pythagorean expectation is basically just taking points for, points against. It gives you an expected win total. For Ole Miss right now, 7 games played, their win total or their Pythagorean win total is 6.7. So basically from their points allowed and points scored, they should be about a 6 or even a 7 win team out of 7 games. So only 5. So they're kind of, underperforming in that regard. So again, I think that just speaks to the point of like the floor isn't falling. Like it's not over. Like Ole Miss is still a good team. And yeah, they, didn't win the one score games, but they still have an opportunity to, really have a special season.
Well, unfortunately, it's just the nature of the thing that if their season wasn't over already, one season or one loss definitely would end it. And unfortunately, they played Georgia. But also, to your credit, I was looking at Bill Connelly's post-game, win expectancy, and he has Ole Miss as underachieving by about 1.2 wins. So it's not too far off from what you were saying. So I mean, there's at least a win that they've left off, and it's infuriating. But that's kind of how things go. They are probably a little bit better than their record, but that is not the world that we live in when it comes to college football.
Yeah, I would say like this should be a 6-win team. A lot, again, lucky for them, it's 12-team playoff this year. I don't think 2 losses excludes you from the playoff. Other years it would, BCS it 100% would exclude you from the championship. But yeah, it's just not, sky isn't falling, Ole Miss fans. It's fine. It's not ideal, not what you maybe hope for, but again, you still have plenty of opportunities to sort of make your mark. You have Georgia, Oklahoma's a tough opponent. I guess we'll see what UF at. Yeah, I mean, they play in the swamp. I don't know. Maybe UF wins another game or two, and then that is a little bit more interesting. But no, they have plenty of opportunities to kind of make their mark and establish themselves as a playoff team.
Well, Lane could be shopping for real estate when they go to visit Florida, so.
Yeah, he might not get back on the plane to Oxford.
Yeah, I don't know if you've seen, but he's posted like a photo of a gator the last couple of game days.
Oh
It's
my
been really
gosh.
weird. Yeah,
I haven't I really haven't followed like him leaving for Florida, and I have no idea what would come of that. Kind of just waiting to see if UF makes a move, and then you kind of have to be on your toes if you're an Ole Miss fan, but I don't know. I could see him staying at Ole Miss.
I don't know. We will see. I mean, we are only a couple of years removed from Auburn watch, with him going to Auburn, but also not
Yeah.
going to Auburn. So, Lord knows. But yeah, I don't know. Just sort of, is there anything that we haven't mentioned that you would like to mention?
No, I think that pretty much covers it. At least on the offense, that's kind of what I see with the offense, just kind of, falling apart a little the last couple games. I think they'll be okay. It will be interesting to see what Oklahoma, when they play in on the 26th, like what comes about that. But other than that, I think they're fine. I think, they're still in contention. They're still a good team. So we'll just see what adjustments Lane can kind of make to this offense. We will see if Jackson Dart can fix his sack issue and see kind of if they can have solutions to that. But yeah, no, other than that, that's about it.
I would say I'm a bit more concerned than you are, but I think the too long didn't listen, which doesn't make any sense because I'm putting this at the end of the episode, is clean up a lot of the pressure stuff, whether it's, working more quick game or, just finding ways to get the ball out faster and or, improve more up front, so you can at least get the ground game going, so you have to put it all on Dart. Have some better luck when it comes to close games.
Yeah,
And
honestly, that close game luck, yeah,
I mean,
it can be a little bit of a toss up on those one score games. So yeah, if they can just get a little bit of luck there, that'll go a long way.
if Jackson Dart doesn't drop a touchdown on the first drive.
Yeah, it's a th again, yeah, we could be talking, it could be a completely different podcast today if, a couple things go a different way.
I mean, I thought that was like a 5, 6, 7 EPA play that he just threw away. So, I mean,
It's brutal.
it makes it look better on the spreadsheets too. So,
Yeah, it
it is what it is, unfortunately. Yeah, I don't
is
know.
what it is. You just got to keep going.
Is there anything that you'd like to plug?
Yeah, I mean, you can find me on Twitter at CFB Numbers. I do have a newsletter where I do a weekly recap slash look ahead to the next week. It's literally just College Football Analytics Newsletter. Not really a clever title at all, but yeah, that's where you can find me. I post graphs on Twitter weekly, and if you ever wanted to see anything, my DMs are open, and I'm glad to help you on any sort of data questions you have.
That is, you are a brave man for advertising your free and open DMs. But I also post graphs and stuff if you're interested. But yeah, if you can follow me on Twitter at bferrell727. You can follow Jason on Twitter at CFP Numbers. If you want more of our Ole Miss and Mississippi State coverage, feel free to check out our lineup of newsletters at djournal.com/newsletters. I mean, really, all of our coverage is online there. So, Jason, I appreciate your time. Thanks for joining me.
Yeah, no problem. Had a good time. Let's see. Yeah, let's see what happens with this team. Hey, maybe if you're listening, you're not as excited. I'll be excited for you. Let's go, baby.
Yeah, there you go. Jason watches Florida State football, so he knows what bad football is like.
I literally do. Yeah, my team is 1-5, continues to play in prime time, and your Ole Miss's bad offense would be a dream for us right now.
Yeah, so if he's saying it's not that bad, Maybe it's not that bad.
It could be worse. It can be worse.
So, anyway, thank you all for joining me, and have a good one.